Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 22nd day of April, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Call, and it was indeed a major weekend that turned out to be a cusp. That's one of those terms that your host uses to describe major events that shape things for both good and for evil. But one way or another, it certainly represents a major change. On Friday, April 19th, was the anniversary of the shot heard round the world, once known as Patriots Day, and the battles at Lexington and Concord Green, which began the war for U.S. independence, later followed up by major U.S. false flags, at first a church in Waco, Texas, and then, 2 years later to the day, the false flag bombing of the Oklahoma City Murrah Building. According to the traditional calendar, Pesach, or Passover, began on Friday evening. The next day was the anniversary of Columbine and some other unsavory events in history. And on Sunday, that was followed up by one of the biggest mass murders and bombings in recent years. Here's the official mainstream summary from the WAPO. Explosions at churches and hotels in Sri Lanka killed at least 290 people and injured more than 500 on Easter Sunday. This, they say, is what we know so far. The government says the attack was carried out by the National Tawhid Jamaat, a local Islamist militant group with suspected, and this is probably no surprise, international assistance. Sri Lanka's president has asked for international assistance in tracking down the group's foreign connections, and the prime minister says elements of the government had prior intelligence about the attacks, which means, as the New York Times put it, all of this is a catastrophic intelligence failure. Two government officials claim the warnings never reached them. Is all of this starting to sound familiar, folks? Well, this New York Times update, as of when I go to press, says that Sri Lankan security forces were warned at least 10 days before the bombings that the militant group was planning attacks against churches, but apparently took no action against it. But after the fact, the Sri Lankan police have now arrested 24 people in connection with the multiple explosions at hotels and churches. The usual police state measures, once it's too late, are also in place, though. A dusk-to-dawn curfew, says the New York Times, was implemented for the second night on Monday in Colombo, the capital, and major socialist media and messaging services, including Facebook and WhatsApp, have been blocked by Big Brother Sri Lanka to try to curb the spread of what they call misinformation. Evidently, suggests the more cynical, that they're worried about more people beginning to blame the religion of peace with a continuing death toll. Later reports confirm no less than 7 separate bombings, and authorities continue to look for still more bombs. Important hotels were struck in a line in the central areas, along with churches on the north and east of the city, as well as one on the east coast. And local police are saying that at least 2 of the highly coordinated attacks were carried out by suicide bombers. Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit has more on the ignored warnings, saying in a headline that an Islamic imam behind the Sri Lanka Easter Sunday attacks has a number of videos up on YouTube preaching hatred and inciting violence, and yet, he opines, it's the conservatives who actually get banned. At least 290 people, the story begins, and you've heard most of this, mostly Christian, were killed Sunday in bombings in Christian churches and Western hotels in Sri Lanka. And at least at one point, it wasn't immediately clear who done it. But later that afternoon, Imam Mohammed Tawhidid reported that the terrorist behind the deadly bombings is an Islamist extremist imam and preacher by the name of Mulvi Zahran Hashim, evidently connected, somewhere up the chain, with Islamic State. And the imam who issued the warning, and tweets, by the way, as the imam of peace, said something you've probably heard places like this before. All of this makes you wonder why YouTube never banned him for his clearly terrorist ideology. Because the man was, as Hoff observes, a prolific lecturer with a long history of racism and preaching of Islamic superiority via literally dozens of videos on YouTube, and he posts several of them. Until, of course, the authorities inevitably take them down. Meanwhile, he notes, YouTube continues to ban and demonize conservative videos for hate speech, and now it looks like, as we've already talked about, there'll be the usual attempts to make sure the information about these latest attacks doesn't make the rounds either. Meanwhile, though, and remember, folks, history tends to show that the earliest reports are usually the more reliable until the narrative develops and the information flow is shut down. But the New York Times is reporting that at a press conference on Monday, Health Minister Rajita Senaratne said there had been a warning as early as April 4th, reiterating that the Prime Minister and his allies had been, quote, completely blind on the situation. He noted the lack of cooperation within the government, saying that when the Prime Minister attempted recently to call a Security Council meeting, members of the panel refused to attend. That's followed up with word that an April 11 letter from the police official not only named the group believed to be planning an attack, National Tawhid Jamaat, but also named individual members and even gave addresses where they could be found. And we already know you could probably find their tweets and YouTube videos on the web. Anyway, it says the information came from foreign intelligence, according to the letter, which did not specify which country had supplied the intelligence, but Indian security officials say they had given it to their Sri Lankan counterparts as early as April 4th. Said another official, quote, and an obvious understatement, we must look into why adequate precautions were not taken, unquote. As if, folks, we didn't already know. The much maligned and banned, but generally still more accurate than most of the waystream, Infowars.com has a piece up indicating that while the latest bombings, plural, in Sri Lanka killed more than five times more people than the higher profile attack not long ago in Christchurch, New Zealand, the differences in media coverage and emphasis, and we're just talking the first day or so, remember, are in stark contrast to how the corporate media, as they put it, zealously covered the attack in Christchurch by a white supremacist that killed 49 last month at a mosque. And those, they note, highlighted not only the attacker's identity, but emphasized continually his white supremacist motives. They're obviously much more inclined to cover something involving a tool they want to complete the banning of, i.e. guns, as opposed to tools that have already been banned for a long time, like bombs. But this seems to go deeper even than that. Remember, the media, and even what now passes for members of Congress, tried to blame the president and his supporters, even though he was in a different country, for the killings. And as we saw even in the events leading up to this latest massacre, there's clearly not only a double standard, but an agenda at play here. And somehow, in that context, I find this paragraph from the New York Times coverage particularly disturbing. This is America's fight, too, said Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who did at least blame Islamic radical terror for the attacks, words which certainly weren't heard during the last administration. But the NYT story continued, FBI agents are being sent to assist Sri Lankan police in their investigation, claiming that they've offered laboratory expertise in testing some of the bomb evidence, and agents have been scouring FBI databases for any pieces of information that could shed additional light on the plotters, unquote. Or perhaps, folks, your cynical host suggests that needs to be covered up along with the video they've gotten so good at early on. Can you think of a single bombing on these shores that we've heard the whole story or even seen the video about? I rest my case. From there, folks, we're going to take what might appear to the uninitiated to be a brief digression. I'm going to suggest there's a common thread here and a warning that ties all of these things together. Starting with this one from Reuters, the headline says, Mexico warns about its deep concern over armed groups on the U.S. border. And no, they're not talking about Islamic migrants and others coming across to El Norte, much less the massively armed drug lords that seem to run their failed socialist state. They're talking about armed patriots in New Mexico that were once at least trying to say no to the invasion and do what Big Brother obviously won't allow done. Dateline Mexico City, where the government said on Saturday it had deep concern about armed groups that intimidate and extort migrants on the border. And they don't mean coyotes either, who just want to come and violate the law so they can get the goodies Big Brother has promised them. Shortly after the ACLU and various socialists in the Senate called for a probe into citizen efforts to block migrants from crossing. How dare they? Said the Mexican Foreign Relations Ministry in a statement referring to the militia groups in New Mexico, quote, these types of practices can drive human rights abuses of people who migrate or request asylum or refuge in the United States, unquote. And while they're worried about the safety of migrants, I don't see any similar concern for people getting blown up, shot in the back, or otherwise robbed, raped, murdered, and killed, like it's been happening all over the U.S. as a result, but especially in the sanctuary cities, and even more especially just south of the border. What a bunch of lying, cowardly hypocrites. But just to show you where the priorities lie, here's a story out of Reuters, Taos, New Mexico, not too far south of where your host is at. The FBI said on Saturday they had arrested Larry Hopkins, the leader of an armed group that dares to stop undocumented migrants and try to turn them over to Border Patrol after they cross the U.S.-Mexico border into their state. The arrest, it says, came 2 days after the former American Civil Liberties SICK union accused the group of being fascists, perhaps because they call themselves something verboten like United Constitutional Patriots, rather than, I don't know, anti-fascists. And the socialist mayor of New Mexico, Lujan Grisham, ordered a so-called investigation. And speaking of evidence and investigations that really aren't, this would almost be funny if it wasn't so blankety-blank and tragic. Speaking on MSNBC's, where else, AM Joy program, Mad Maxine Waters, guess where she's from, said there is enough evidence, more than enough evidence even, in the special counsel's witch hunt report to move forward with the impeachment of President Donald Trump, who wasn't supposed to have been elected anyway. Quote, the Congress really does have to step up to the plate. Unquote. And she went on to claim there's plenty of information and evidence in here. And there certainly is, folks, because it's been obvious for a long time. Zero is more than sufficient. Let me see, what was the old line? Something like, evidence? Where we're going, we don't need evidence. Oh yeah, they don't need any evidence, but whatever there was in there, there's more than enough, quote, not only when it comes to obstruction of justice, but also on collusion or conspiracy, whatever you want to call it, to move forward with that impeachment. Are there enough dots out there yet? How about this one, when it comes to one hand washing the other, and lots of evidence that actually is out there, slowly being released, making a case that Big Brother's minions still don't want you to know, from Derek Brose via the Mind Unleashed blog, and of course Zero Hedge, a new Roundup cancer lawsuit has yet again exposed the cozy relationship between Monsanto and the EPA, or Environmental Propaganda Agency. Yet another lawsuit, it begins, the third one, related to claims that Monsanto's Roundup causes cancer, has revealed still more new details about the cozy relationship between the biotech giant and U.S. so-called regulators. On Monday, Monsanto Company corporate spokesman William Reeves, certainly no relationship to Superman, admitted the corporation has regularly communicated with U.S. regulatory agencies regarding reviews of the controversial poison known as the Roundup herbicide. Reeves denied, says the piece, that Monsanto had given the agencies orders to follow, and his testimony, sick, came during the latest lawsuit against the biotech giant as Alva and Alberta Pilliod fight to prove that Roundup also caused their cancer. The two are living with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma after spraying the herbicide on their properties for nearly 30 years, and the septuagenarian couple, says the piece, were diagnosed with the most common form of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, in first 2011 and then 2015. And now they're seeking damages after study after study after study has linked the world's most popular herbicide to, of course, cancer and death. In spite of massive propaganda, advertising, and, of course, regulatory approval. Most of the details, folks, we've heard before. I guarantee you we're going to hear them more and more, even if the press doesn't want to talk about it very much, because guess who pays their fees? Anyway, the Pilliod's trial, says the piece, is expected to wrap up in the coming weeks, with Monsanto's lawyers beginning their cross-examination next week. And no doubt, thousands more of these to follow. In the wake of yet more Tesla spontaneously combusting and blowing up over the last few days, the latest, one that spontaneously combusted in a parking garage in China, there was even a Chinese imitation called a Neo that did a really good imitation and self-immolated on Monday. Well, now, says the poignant piece from Zero Hedge, electric car owners have received yet another shock. A new study, this one from the Brussels Times, about a new German study that exposes how electric vehicles will hardly decrease CO2 emissions in Europe over the coming years, as if that really even mattered anyway, folks. And that worse still, horror of horrors, the study asked the question, are electric cars really green? Seems to answer no, and pointed out that they even have significantly higher CO2 emissions than the dreaded diesel vehicles that are now all but verboten. This is due, at least in part, it says, to the significant amounts of energy used in the mining and processing of things like lithium, cobalt, and manganese, critical raw materials for the production of electric car batteries, which tend to have a short life and end up in landfills anyway. We'll skip over the nitty-gritty of the numbers here. Suffice it to say they're damning, and you can look up the study if you want. But a battery pack for a Tesla Model 3 pollutes the climate with roughly 11 to 15 tons of CO2. Meaning, when you put in all the factors, they produce far more emissions than diesel vehicles by Mercedes on a per-mile basis. And they even add insult to injury in the story by showing a picture of a Tesla charger sitting next to the diesel generator that powers it. Maybe Big Brother's governments ought to look more closely into the technologies that they subsidize and penalize, because they're nowhere close to doing as good of a job as the free market, left alone, almost always has. The researchers conclude by pointing out that methane-powered gasoline engines or hydrogen motors would be far more efficient on all of those fronts. But here your host has to jump in and say, hey, they misunderstand. That really never was the point. It was always and only, ultimately, about control. Still, though, I think at least part of Zero Hedge's conclusion is kind of funny. One lesson I learned, they quote one tweeter as saying, don't park your car next to a Tesla. And maybe, they add, Elon Musk planned to save the world with electric cars and get subsidized to the point of being a billionaire in the process is the biggest scam of our lifetime. Well, no, hardly, your host suggests. There's always 5G, remember? And it tends to burn people from the outside in, rather than all at once. But still, though, the same bottom line and ultimate plan are at play there, too. But wait, when it comes to politically correct science and bogus economics, we're just getting started. Tom Rogan, via the Washington Examiner, writes about a nutcase named George Monbiot, who recently appeared on Frankie Boyle's far-left political chat show, appropriately called The New World Order. And as a columnist and so-called environmental activist, Monbiot explained that in order to save the planet, we have to end air travel flying and cease consumption of meat. Unless, of course, you're part of the elite, in which case you can have both of those to your heart's content. But if that doesn't sound easy to you, you pee on you, then you're not alone. He says, indeed, those ideas are so destructive of modern life, unless the right people are doing them, remember, and economics and the pursuit of happiness, they could justifiably be regarded as downright insane. But Monbiot was just getting warmed up. Next, says the author, he took us down the intellectual river into the heart of activist darkness. Quote, we have to overthrow this system which is eating the planet, perpetual growth. And he pulled no punches, saying that economic growth of 3% represents madness. Quote, we can't do it by just pitting around at the margins of the problem. We've got to go straight to the heart of capitalism and overthrow it. And as Tom Rogan said, the morons in Boyle's audience just lapped it up. Remember, folks, these are the same people that believe CO2 is causing non-existent man-made global warming. And they think the occasional cortex is an intellectual, too. So why are we not surprised? We'll return now to a continuing theme that the latest act of Islamic mass terror just helps to emphasize. I'm looking at a piece that actually came out last week, but just now seems to be getting legs, about the suspicious fire, yeah, that's the ticket, at Notre Dame Cathedral, which former CIA guy Robert David Steele has come out and said really is a false flag, call it arson if you prefer, organized by the likes of what he calls the Satanists Macron, Merkel, and May, with a goal of, what else, saving the European Union and destroying the foundations of Western civilization. He was devastated, he begins, by the burning, a place where he once prayed, and noted that the parallels to both the Reichstag fire that helped to establish the Third Reich, your host remembers, and 9/11, which seems to have established the Fourth, loomed. So here he summarizes is what I've been told by a ranking source in France. Number one, Canadian intelligence officers who went immediately to the site for a first-hand look were prevented from getting close. There was, in fact, no electricity in the area where the fire is alleged to have started. Number two, two dead within the fire, both evidently murdered. Number three, with two bullets each. There were, of course, no helicopters brought in to fight the fire. There was a dysfunctional water spraying machine, a mockery of firefighting performance. Number six, the official narrative pretended it was an accident, and it was so immediate and clearly on the shelf that it must have been ready to go. Number seven, the timing, too, is impossible to dismiss. It was intended, that he says, among other things, clearly, to prevent announcement of Macron's loss in the national debate inspired by the Yellow Vests. And hey, maybe they can turn it around and even blame it on them. Numbers 8 and 9 are both afternotes, one of which is that the anniversary of the Titanic just happened to have been the precursor to the creation of these central banks and the subversion of all governments, and B, all of this was intended, he writes, to save the global financial system owned by the Satanists, all dependent in turn on saving the European Union, with all kinds of connections that have already been explored at length between Merkel, May, Macron, and even the guy now playing Pope on TV. All of which, again, is intended as a death blow against Western civilization. We've seen more since, it would seem. And you can't help but note that the roof of the Notre Dame Cathedral, we're up to number 11 now, was a 13th century original, and it's survived all kinds of wars, all manner of natural hazards in the 900 years since, up until now. Subsequently, Steele goes into all kinds of satanic connections that do seem to resonate with this time of year, for good and for ill, scripturally and anti-scripturally, if you will, and concludes by quoting Scott Bennett, always, he says, a good source for the grand psyop, who says, if I was a betting man, my guess is that this Notre Dame Cathedral fire was a Kristallnacht type of psyop event, similar to what the Nazis ignited in the 1930s fire, and blamed the communists for to win the election. My guess is this is similar, with Macron benefiting by shutting down the Yellowvest protests, which have been not only destroying him, but putting France into civil war. Quo bene, who benefits from the fire? Well, perhaps Israeli Mossad and or Shin Bet doubling down on the religious war between Muslims and Christians. Think Christchurch, and of course this was written before the Sunday event. And continues Bennett, a renewed religious war is always good for the military-industrial complex. Perhaps they might even try and blame it on Iran, but most likely it would have been MEK if it was anyone working with MI6 CIA. Oh well, just another day in the police state. Unquote. And I'll follow that up with some of the specifics of that battle against Western civilization, and in particular Christianity, via a piece from Michael Snyder at the end of The American Dream entitled Churches Have Become the Number One Target for Hate Attacks. Average, 105 of them every single month, as the bombings in Sri Lanka have again put the spotlight on the tide of violence against Christians and anybody, basically, that actually believes Scripture all over the world. According to Open Doors USA, he begins, an average of 105 churches and or Christian buildings are burned or attacked each and every month, more than three per day, and almost all of those attacks get ignored by the waste-stream media in the Western world. In addition, an average of 345 Christians, and he cites the source, are killed for faith-related reasons each and every month. And of course, these numbers will soon be out of date because violence against Christians, Bible believers, Jews, pretty much you name it, continues to escalate all over the globe. And the horrifying attacks that we just witnessed in Sri Lanka, says Snyder, are the perfect example. He even quotes CBS News, which has a hard time not saying outright that the attackers were Muslim extremists. Well, religious extremists, they say, as if that was the same thing and allows them to avoid the dreaded Islamic terror or ME words. So yeah, he asks pointedly, why does the mainstream media have to be so politically correct all the time? Yeah, they won't even dare to use the word arson, much less Islamic terrorism, in association with the Notre Dame Cathedral, even as a remote possibility, in spite of all the obvious patterns there in France. With more than 10 churches hit since the beginning of February alone, he follows that up with some specific stories. But the bottom line is, by a very wide margin, churches are the number one target for hate attacks, and it's only going to get worse. Sadly, churches in the United States are increasingly being attacked as well. You may not have heard about it in the news, but three churches in Louisiana were recently destroyed by arson. He follows that up with a list of almost two dozen fatal church shootings that have happened since Columbine. There would have been more, but there are still quite a few places where Bible believers think they have a right to keep and bear arms, and they've stopped them. The smarter terrorists, of course, focus on truly gun-free killing zones, even if the waste stream doesn't want to talk about that either. The media can attempt to ignore what's happening all they want, and the dumbed-down sheeple can keep drinking the Kool-Aid. But none of this changes the fact, and here I'll paraphrase Snyder's conclusion, that hatred for the God of the Bible, His Word, and those who worship Him is growing. Yeah, we've been warned it was coming, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.